Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.
Well, last night's session, certainly in the US, was really exciting. It was hugely volatile into that Federal Open Market Committee press release where the Fed predictably hiked by 50 basis points. And then the market really only finding some kind of conviction in the Q&A session afterwards. And boy, did it. There was a massive rally. We saw that spill over into Asia and parts of our market and Europe. But then that faded into the afternoon. And by the time the US session opened this afternoon, it was probably Anthea Gardner, MD of Cartesian Capital. Welcome to the show. The briefest relief rally that we've ever seen.
Good evening, Michael. I'm afraid so. I was very hopeful last night when I was watching all of this going down. But yeah, very brief, unfortunately. I do think that the market tends to overreact. And I think what's happened is that the market has already priced in so many rate hikes. And then Powell did a fine job, I think, yesterday of just reminding the market of what everything is all about, starting with him pointing out that the Fed's job is to maintain price stability, not to avoid recessions. And of course, we can talk about the inverted yield curve if we want to, which is pointing to this recession. And that obviously without price stability, the economy doesn't work. So, you know, he said there's a good chance of a soft landing. So he's really talking this recessionary talk down. He also kind of made a point of saying, listen, I know that some of you think it was a possibility, but we didn't think of raising rates 75 bips, because the minute you do 50, they think, oh, what's the next step?
Yeah.
So he's kind of just calmed the market down, I think, about worrying about this high inflation. And not that inflation is not important. I think he's taking, well, the Fed in general, taking inflation very seriously. But he's saying to everyone, just, you know, like, let it be. We know what our job is, and we're going to stick to it. He also spoke, and this was interesting to me, about the strength of balance sheets of the consumer and businesses in the U.S. And how it will mitigate the chances of a recession. Now, I don't know if I believe in the strength of consumers and businesses' balance sheets. To me, that seems a bit superficial almost, I think. You know, and then he suggested that core inflation is peaking. Of course, he pointed to the other potential shocks, the war in Ukraine, lockdowns in China. But that's kind of, it was him speaking about their stance and where they see it. And there's no doubt he understands this market incredibly well. So he knows to mention the labor market overheating and the suggestion that the Fed will have what they call a neutral rate. Balancing full employment, maximum output, and keeping inflation constant, and having this 2-3%, which is now 2-3% apparently, target inflation rate. I think the market believed him, but there is just too much bad news for traders and investors to go for broke.
Actually. Yeah. And you laughed at the now 2-3%. I mean, when did that happen? Let's just shift it up to a band now all of a sudden. And then you also had the Bank of England today. And I mean, if you look at what the Bank of England was doing, it's sort of everything the Fed fears. You've got a divided policy decision there. They were split. Upside inflation risks, downside growth risks. They see inflation peaking at 10.2% in the UK. I'm hearing stories of, you know, people in the UK being forced to decide between paying for heating or paying for food at the end of the month. And they see GDP contracting in 2023. So lots for market participants to look at in all of this and say, well, all of this surely is going to start hitting company earnings and fundamentals.
Indeed. And I'm probably going off on a tangent a bit, but I was looking at the U.S. earnings numbers that kind of started in April and continued into May. And even though the earnings were higher than expected, again, the market didn't believe it, because all this bad news, it's the recession's coming, inflation and lower growth in UK and Europe, and predominantly, as you mentioned, the UK, it just keeps traders and investors in check, really.
Well, it wouldn't be a market rep without you going off on a tangent. And yeah, that's what this is all about. And it's interesting. Speaking of tangents, if you look then at South Africa's inflation projections, and there was a note from Investec saying that inflation is going to remain under 6% within the Reserve Bank's target of 3 to 6. And yesterday, late afternoon, a note from Moody's saying that it expects inflation to rise up to 8.2% in South Africa. So a huge divergence out there as to where inflation is going here in South Africa and indeed around the world. That creates a lot of uncertainty.
I think the fact that South African inflation was lower than the U.S. inflation a while ago probably shocked everybody as well. So there's kind of, should we recalibrate our SA inflation? But 8% seems excessive to me. And yeah. Tito Mboweni was speaking at a conference, I don't know if it was yesterday or today, and he said, you know, when the U.S. Fed raises interest rates, the Reserve Bank will follow. But he also said our central bank operates independently, and they understand the consequences of high inflation on the poor and the poorest and the poor, and that they will not be, I think the word he used was reckless or something.
Yeah.
And so this Moody's note saying 8% inflation in South Africa is scary. I'm not sure I've completely bought into it. I do understand the exogenous factors driving South African inflation and what we're seeing, the continued war, the high commodities, or the high oil price, I should say. So input prices,
yep,
definitely increasing. And in fact, we, you know, just from a man in the street level, kind of, I don't think wages have been increased that much in the last year. And yet your spend every month is so much more kind of from groceries and petrol and all sorts of things, as the input costs are just so much and are being passed on. 8%? That kind of makes your heart stop a bit, doesn't it?
Well, it's enough to drive you to drink more of Anheuser-Busch InBev's expensive premium beers, and that seems to be what the world is doing at the moment. Looking at the AB InBev update, its first quarter earnings and profits beating analyst forecasts and helped along by consumers buying more expensive beer. What do you make of the numbers?
That was a brilliant segue, Michael, because the one thing that struck me was revenue increased by 11%. Volumes were up by 2.8%. Where is that 8%? So I had to have a little look. And actually, I saw an interesting comment that they were saying drinkers are returning to bars in the US and Europe after lockdowns and are completely undeterred by having to pay more for their beers.
Oh, there's
so
a surprise.
So they certainly increased the beer prices, even though volumes are not fantastic. But a great result from Anheuser-Busch, give them that at least.
Yeah,
even though I'm beginning to feel the inflation bug.
I know, it is scary, isn't it, when you see inflation like this. I don't think many of us in our lifetimes have lived through a period of sustained high inflation and what that means for sustained high interest rates as well. So it is definitely the big talking point in markets at the moment. Staying on company news, update from Mondi, quarterly earnings up. Yesterday, it announced that it's disposing of its Russia business. I suppose no huge surprise in that. But overall, another really good set of numbers is from Mondi.
Almost an unbelievable set of numbers. EBITDA up 63%. And kind of, if you put it in perspective, which just is mad, but just to put it in perspective, if you have used their two comparable peers, Smurfit Kappa and DS Smith, Smurfit Kappa's first quarter 22 EBITDA was up 33%. So Mondi, in this case, double. DS Smith, they don't really provide quarterly updates, but their operating profit is expected to be up 49%. So there's definitely something going on here. It looks like the packaging market is recovering very strongly. Still below 2019 levels, it seems to tell me. Interesting one, this, because they spoke about their divestments from Russian assets. As far as I know, you know, other companies that have exited Russia this year don't seem to be or have generated any meaningful proceeds from doing that.
Yeah.
So I don't think that they're going to realize any value. Russia makes up 20% of the group's EBITDA. So if you kind of work that backwards, ex-Russia, Mondi's on 13 times earnings, and which is pretty much in line with its five-year average, you know. So not much growth, even though we saw this crazy, unbelievable, almost EBITDA number.
Yeah, I'm hearing rumors, and when you say, you know, what's going on in Russia, it's very difficult to get your handle on whether or not there might be an internal coup against Vladimir Putin. But increasingly, it looks like pretty reputable news agencies are reporting about stirrings within the Kremlin, and that those who are close to Putin are really not happy with what's going on and believe it's been a huge strategic misstep. And one can only hope that there is some internal resolution inside Russia. Otherwise, I don't see this ending with a favorable outcome for the West or Western investors anytime soon. Let's preview the mining indaba that's coming up next week. And the first in-face mining indaba, the big one that happens in Cape Town, it's usually in February. It was obviously pushed back because of COVID. And obviously lots to talk about in the commodity market at the moment. The cover story on the FM today was, is the commodity party over, with a pretty shabby looking office party type scene with half drunk bottles of wine and empty cups and whatever on the table. But it does feel like this market is pretty toppish. You've got Sibanye-Stillwater announcing an earnings slump on the back of a strike. So there's this increased labor action that's happening because the companies in the platinum and gold sector have been printing record profits. So there's lots to talk about at the mining indaba. How do you see it going?
Indeed, when it comes to Sibanye-Stillwater, I know the SA Gold business makes up a very small proportion of their EBITDA, but it definitely is having quite a negative impact on their profitability. And I mean, the strike's been going on for 2 months now, so obviously is going to. And needless to say, Froneman's 300 million rand payout has only strengthened their resolve, you know, the striking miners' resolve. It was a bit disappointing. Operating performance was fairly consistent across the PGM segments. And also kind of in the US, you know, they had a mine safety and health problem. They had a death in June of last year, which they're still trying to resolve. So, you know, I think that's still on hold until they're happy to restart operations completely. And then Goldfields, you know, I think a solid set of, solid operational update is not a set of results. Sorry, yeah. Gold production was up 7%, although quarter on quarter it was down 8%. So you can see where the trend is going.
Yeah.
And we have lots to talk about at the indaba next week.
Yeah, and green metals and all of that, and coal, and you know, where is all of that going? But I'm glad you mentioned Neil Froneman's pay package. I mean, it is an enormous package of 300 million. A lot of it is long-term share incentives that were issued only 3 years ago. Is that long-term? But I think from the union's perspective, that they have to remember, and just doing back of the matchbox calculations, you're talking about 30,000 mine workers. You know, their wage demand is an increase of 8,000 rand per month on their basic, plus increased pension and plus increased overtime rates. And that can easily catapult that figure to between 10 to 12,000. If you then, you know, multiply that out, it's an extra 4 billion rand a year. So you can't just, yeah, and ultimately shareholders will reduce the company's CEO's pay if they feel that he or she isn't unlocking that level of value. But, you know, how many blue collar workers are earning packages of 30,000 rand plus? It just seems to be just completely out of step with what's going on. But sadly, it does look like it's going to lead to a really protracted fight here.
Indeed. And so it's very difficult, as you say, to look at the numbers like superficially on that level. What I found interesting was that I forget his name now, but I heard an interview with one of the Sibanye senior management, and he was saying that in 2013, they offered unions profit share, and they didn't even get to a point where they were discussing what type of profit share because the unions just outright rejected it. Now, I would say that if the workers had taken profit share, it would have been substantially better for them.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the other point is if Roneman or executives don't perform, they get fired. Not only does he not get his millions payout, but he gets fired. And that's, I guess, part of the risk that you take as an executive.
Anthea Gardner, MD of Cartesian Capital, with your Thursday markets here on Hot Business.
Hot 102.7 Business with Michael Avery.